Please welcome Dean Thompson.
So, a while back, I was having dinner with my family, and my wife set her fork down, and she said, "Stop. Just stop. Can we at least have one meal where somebody's not talking about scabs or bodily functions or acts of predation or dead animals or farts or poop or anything like that? Just one meal." And I looked at it and I thought to myself, you know, when you live in a family where the children are being raised by naturalists, that's just kind of what you're going to get. And I've come to the conclusion that naturalists and people that spend any amount of time in the outdoors, we've become immune or tempered to the, quote, disgusting things in life. And when we get around non-naturalists, sometimes we seem rather crude or rude or maybe even low class. But when naturalists get around each other, then the fun begins. There are a few boundaries. Anatomy, physiology, bizarre animal behavior, mating rituals, farts, poop. These are all just topics of conversation, things to joke about, things to write songs about. I mean, even when you visit a naturalist home, I've been to some of these homes, you walk up to them and the outside looks like it's some sort of pagan shrine. You know, instead of garden gnomes and statues of woodland creatures, there's shells and bones and skulls of woodland creatures scattered about the yard. And when you go inside their house, again, there's more plant and animal paraphernalia. And then there's this shelf. There's this shelf in there where they've got their special rocks or their shells or their feathers or other talismans that they've collected to remind them of their journeys or places that they've been. And then there's these unique items. These unique items that they break out every once in a while at a party or a gathering to either amaze their friends or stump their other fellow naturalists. I remember being at a party one time, and we were standing there. All of a sudden, I heard from the other side of the room going, "Whoa, check it out. Where in the world did you find an elephant seal baculum?" Okay, now, some of you know that baculums are penis bones, okay? And all mammals have baculums, all right? And the elephant seal baculum is an amazing baculum, okay? It's very impressive. Now, wait, I misspoke, though, because I said all mammals have baculums. That's not true, okay? Humans do not possess baculums. Unfortunately, human males are the only male mammal that, alas, does not have a baculum. Now, I know there's some women out there thinking, it was like, Dean, it's not that big of a deal that human males don't have baculums. Well, speaking on behalf of all the men over 50 out there, easy for you to say, right? But I digress. I remember at another party we were at, it was a gathering of field biologists and people that would climb into nest sites and examine prey remains. And there were some college professors there as well. And this guy brought out this random dried up piece of an animal. We were passing it around. It had some hairs in a little hole. We were taking guesses, could not figure out what the heck it was. And finally, the owner, beaming with pride that he stumped us all, announced that we were holding the nether end of a possum. That's right, it was a dried up possum butthole, okay? We were all suitably impressed. I mean, you know, oh, the things you can, oh, and I gotta admit, that was not the only time the possum sphincter made its appearance, okay? The things you can learn from naturalists is just amazing. I mean, every naturalist has these things, but they also have stories to tell. Stories they can tell of things that just blew their mind, were a little bit gross, but at the same time dramatically expanded their knowledge and understanding and respect for the natural world. I actually have a short little story about that. Would you like to hear it? I thought you guys are pretty weird too. Okay. So I was visiting some friends over in southeastern Arizona, and we went over there, and when we arrived in that evening, we had a nice dinner of burritos and beer around the campfire, camping there. The following morning had eggs and potatoes and onions and some good strong coffee with some nice bittersweet chocolate. And after having all that food in me and chase it with that strong cup of coffee and that caffeine, my lower GI tract was undergoing some vigorous peristalsis. And so it was time to find a place to conduct my morning constitution. Now, there were no facilities there, so I grabbed a shovel and off I went into the southeastern Arizona desert scrub. And before I even left camp, my buddy's like, no, Dean, you don't need to bury it. Now, I'm thinking to myself, don't bury it, because I was always raised with the credo of leave no trace, low impact camping. And he said, don't bury it, and I was kind of puzzled, but frankly, I had other pressing matters to attend to. So off I went and found a nice location with a beautiful view of the Chiricahua Mountains, and I hunkered down and did what I had to do. Well, as I was finishing up the paperwork, all of a sudden I heard a buzz, and I froze, instantly thinking of those large rattlesnakes we had seen the previous evening. But then I realized the buzz I was hearing was not reptilian, it was more insectile. And it was moving, it was like, and was making large circles, slowly homing in on my position. And then it came right over me and cut power and dropped to the ground about 2 feet away from my handiwork there on the desert soil. And damn if it wasn't a dung beetle. No wonder my buddy had told me not to bury it. A dung beetle. Now, I had heard about these critters, but I had never seen one. And now I was going to be able to see one in action. Okay? And not just one. Okay? But all of a sudden, I'm here. From all points in the compass, there's dung beetles coming over here. And pretty soon, there's like 15 to 20 dung beetles climbing on and around my digested burritos right there. I mean, it was a beehive. I should say a beetle hive of activity. Okay, and what they were doing, they go in there and they carve off chunks of these dung, right? And they would stand on their front legs, and with their hind legs, they would mold it into a ball and start rolling these things off. And as they would roll it off, the ball would kind of roll off and pick up little bits of sand and duff, kind of like confectioner sugar on a donut hole, okay? And as they were rolling it off, one beetle would try and steal another beetle's ball, and there'd be little skirmishes that break out, and then there was this one beetle who was like riding the ball like a little acrobat in a circus as he was pushing. It was all very entertaining. And so after about, you know, I followed them, you know, and they rolled them off into the bushes, and they would get to a place like by a clump of grass or a bush where it was shady, and they'd stop, and then they'd dig down underneath the ball, and the ball would kind of disappear into the hole, and then it was gone. And I knew from reading that they would lay an egg on there, right? And then the larva would hatch, and it would have a source of food to eat. I mean, here I was, providing nutrients to the next generation of dung beetles, okay? Talk about feeling one with nature, all right? Pretty soon, after about 5 minutes or so, there was nothing left. I mean, all that remained were my footprints in the desert silence. I truly had left no trace. Okay, well, with the help of those wonderful sanitation engineers, the dung beetle. And as I was walking up, I was thinking to myself how glad I was to be a naturalist and to hang out in the company of naturalists and people that are tempered by the, quote, disgusting things in life. Because it's through that lens and through that perspective that once again, I was able to expand my knowledge and understanding and respect for the efficiency of our natural world. Thank you.